Good evening and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Joining me is tonight's co-host, courtesy of the San Jose office of Berliner Cohen, Josh Borger, by now well-known as a frequent guest on Your Legal Rights. Josh practices commercial and civil litigation in a variety of areas. Last year, we witnessed another police killing in Minnesota, all caught on camera. That it played out in slow motion only made it seem worse. As all this played out and people were left to try to make some sense out of a senseless tragedy, some saw themselves called to action to redress grievances against their government in a series of protests that spanned the entire country. Of course, we're all speaking of the death of George Floyd. With the verdicts in the trial of Derek Chauvin last week, some would say this long story has come to a close, while to others, we began a new chapter, began a long period of reflection as we recognize that 158 years after President Lincoln spoke at Gettysburg, we still have not been truly acting in accordance with the proposition that all men are created equal. In no arena is that more true than the policing of our nation's cities. The killing of George Floyd sparked a response unlike anything we've seen in recent years. What do the verdicts in the trial of Derek Chauvin teach us about where we are with policing our cities today? In another story, Representative Zoe Lofgren reports that prior to the January 6th assault on the Capitol, a commanding officer directed officers to pursue only agitators against former President Trump and ignore the potential pro-Trump troublemakers. Was this a misperception of the threat? An unconscious bias within the chain of command that allowed white supremacists and others to overrun the Capitol and bring a halt to the lawful transition of power in our seemingly frail republic? Josh, you're with us now. Are these stories truly discreet, or does the story of the assault on the Capitol give us some insights into our institutions? Is there a systemic problem involving the police departments or the legal system? Do we trust the police to trust to protect us and the legal system? And if not, what needs to be changed and how do we do it? Are the problems with law enforcement or with the justice system? Or are they just problems within our society at large? Most importantly, what does all this say about us? Where do we go from here? As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 if you're in the Bay Area. If you're outside of the Bay Area, outside of the local dialing area, you can call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, our attorney guests cannot give you specific legal advice, as we don't have all of the salient facts of your situation. Some of our guests who may work for government or private entities express their own opinions and not that of the entities for whom they work. As always, we're happy to share the legal principles to help guide you in your decision-making. You can contact us with any questions about the people that protect us, the law that protects us from perhaps other people, and the institutions that, above all else, are here to protect us. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. And I'm seeing a nodding. Does that mean I have you guys now?
We're here. I think I was muted by the host, it tells me.
I've been trying to do that for a while, so I consider that a victory. So again, people are not, you're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. Josh?
Yes, sir. Why don't you do the intros, Josh?
Okay, tonight's guests. Joining us in momentarily, not quite here with us, but will be in momentarily. San Mateo attorney Kevin Allen was a deputy public defender in San Francisco and is the former director of the Office of Citizen Complaints of the San Francisco Police Commission, and for the past 15 years has been in private practice in San Mateo, San Francisco, Santa Clara, and Alameda counties, representing people that have been accused of crimes. Dean Johnson is a practicing attorney. He's also an Emmy-nominated legal analyst and commentator for both legal and political matters for entities including ABC News, NBC News, and Al Jazeera, amongst others. A former prosecutor, Mr. Johnson practices criminal defense and civil litigation in both state and federal courts. Joining us momentarily, we hope. We've had some difficulty catching up with him, but Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris is known for representing Rodney King in his civil rights lawsuit against the Los Angeles Police Department. Since then, Mr. Burris has represented plaintiffs in a number of high-profile lawsuits against police departments across the state of California, including the Oakland Rioters case, where a gang of Oakland officers were found to be planting evidence on citizens, which caused the federal government to investigate and oversee the Oakland Police Department to this day. And with over 40 years of law enforcement experience, Sheriff Carlos G. Bolanos was appointed as sheriff of San Mateo County in July 2016 and elected in 2018. Sheriff Bolanos' priorities are community engagement and relationship building, programs that promote positive relationships between youth and law enforcement, and programs in our correctional facilities that provide inmates with an opportunity for a better life upon their release. And with that, Sheriff Bolanos, Josh, Dean, welcome to your legal rights. And again, we're expecting Kevin Allen and John Burris at any point. But before we
Thanks, Jeff and Josh. Great to be here.
Before we go further, I'd like to begin by throwing something out and asking anyone to jump in. But the real issue I see it is there something about law enforcement or that shows them to be biased and dangerous, or is it merely reflecting some of the biases and problems in our larger society and things we have to come to grip with?
Well, let me start. This is Dean speaking. I hope that the one thing we can accomplish tonight is to get beyond the cliche that I hear every time I'm on TV talking about this subject, which is that it's just a few rotten apples. It's not just a few rotten apples. Anthony Fauci has called police violence a public health emergency. Police violence has become one of the leading causes of death for young men in the United States. If present statistics continue, 1 in 1,000 black men who are alive in the United States today will die as a product of police violence. In Minneapolis, where Derek Chauvin was tried for the murder of George Floyd, a black person is 4 times more likely than a white person to be arrested. Black people are killed by police at 4 times the rate of the rest of the population. Statistics indicate that about every 28 hours, a black person dies at the hands of police. So this is not a matter of a few rotten apples spoiling the barrel. This is a matter of the barrel being spoiled because we keep rotten apples in there. We just heard today that officer who is accused of shooting a black man in the back in Atlanta, and who has a potential murder indictment sitting on some prosecutor's desk somewhere, was just reinstated to the Atlanta Police Department. In San Antonio, an officer who gave a homeless man a sandwich filled with human feces was recently reinstated with back pay. The rotten apples aren't being taken out of the barrel, and that's why the barrel is being spoiled. Derek Chauvin was with the Minneapolis Police Department for 19 years. He had 22 citizen complaints. He had 2 medals of valor, but both involved shooting incidents, in one of which he killed somebody. And yet he was not only an officer, he was a training officer. So this is a systemic problem.
I don't dispute the figures you gave or some of those specific examples, but My question is, does this not go beyond law enforcement? Is there not tension between different groups of people within our society so that when an interracial couple puts their house on the market, if they cover one photo as opposed to the other, the price that they get back on an appraisal is markedly different? I don't think the problems that you're discussing, Dean, are necessarily related to law enforcement as much as where we are as a people right now. And we really need to clean it up. Carlos, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have any feelings in that regard?
Yeah, you didn't cut me off. I was just listening to what Dean had to say. You know, you bring up some very valid points. I think that racism, implicit bias, is a stain on our entire country. And it cuts across all of our systems. Law enforcement, we're part of the overall system. I think it's very easy for some people to try to isolate and say that it's just law enforcement, because that's a lot easier and a lot less courageous than to say we as America have always had a race problem. And that's what we have. I do believe that some agencies, and I really try to stay away from painting with such a broad brush, some agencies don't discipline their people, and they allow bad employees to stay in the business, just as they do in the legal business, in the medical business, in the educational business. These issues, people have found an easy target in law enforcement. People who, risk their lives on a daily basis to keep us all safe. And the vast majority in my 40 years that I've worked with that are, noble, dedicated, brave, compassionate people. So, I don't buy the simplistic rationale presented by the previous speaker that, all of a sudden all the race problems that exist in our country are law enforcement's, and that everybody in law enforcement is bad. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll let somebody else talk, is, law enforcement is involved in all these incidents because none of you are responding to these calls for service or dealing with these individuals that people in law enforcement have to deal with. I think we've lost sight that, we deal with bad guys, bad people, and they're dangerous. And there's nobody that winds up in prison that didn't have an interaction with law enforcement. And I forget a statistic I saw, but like 98% of law enforcement contacts end with no injury, no violence at all. So I'll stop there, but yeah.
Yeah, I, Carlos, I think you're completely misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not saying that it's only the police that have a problem with racism. Obviously, racism permeates many, many of the institutions of our society. The criminal justice system and the justice system in general is a problem. We know that, for example, the race of the defendant and the race of the victim are the best possible predictors of the outcome of a criminal case. But the problem with police is, I think, not just that there is a lot of racism, it's how we deal with that racism. We've gotten to a point where we believe that police officers should be the people who respond to just about every kind of social disturbance, from a cat up a tree to domestic violence to somebody who has mental health issues. And the people who are responding are police officers whose primary method of resolving conflicts is to kick butt and take names. And that just
agree with that.
Well, let me jump in for a moment. We're going to get back to this point in just a moment. But we are here as part of KALW, and as part of being part of the KALW family, we have to help help to keep the doors open. So let me turn it over to John, and we'll be back here in just a moment.
Hi, this is John Carroll here at KALW, and I'm joined by the fabulous Angie Coiro from In Deep with Angie Coiro. But first, we're here to take just a few moments to remind you that everything that you hear on this radio station is made possible by listener contributions. It's community-based public radio like KALW that strengthens the creative fabric of the Bay Area. And KALW keeps you aware of the creativity that's all around us here in the Bay. And it gives you the chance to get connected and stay involved. So connect with us now. Call us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and click donate.
You know what? Sometimes you get that feeling people are talking about you. Well, we are talking about you. We're talking to you. You are someone who listens to and appreciates KALW, or you wouldn't be hearing this right now. Community-based public radio like KALW strengthens what makes the Bay Area the best, our creative fabric. We keep you aware of that creativity, as with all our local programming, our arts programming, all of that you can support. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
And you can contribute any amount that is comfortable within your budget. If you contribute $75 or start a sustaining membership at $6 a month, you can get your choice of one of our fabulous KALW t-shirts. You know, you could get the transistor logo tee, you can get the lunch tray tee, or you can get a cross country, whatever t-shirt you like, you can get. But the important thing is that you call now at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and click donate. And you can also choose your gift at that point.
You know, we really don't care how you came to KALW. We love the stories, but it doesn't matter. What matters is you're here and we want you on board. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. Thank you.
Before we go further, let me quickly turn it over to Wendy in San Francisco. Wendy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I thought it was your topic. I'd like to comment on your topic. First of all, policemen aren't in barrels, and when you talk about barrels, we got to change it. We don't need barrels anymore. We just need something much more creative than barrels. So I just think the topic is too narrow, talking about whether the policemen are good or bad, or racism impacts things or doesn't impact things, or if all police are good or all police are bad. I don't think that's the topic that It's Your Legal Rights should be looking at. I'd like to see how, if you would look at your own self of how legal rights, how the court systems, how the attorneys, how the, you know, what from you, your point of view, what you'd like to do to make things better in the world. And I'd be interested in hearing those points of view because your guests are obviously very interesting people that have had contact in this area. So I'm just making a request that you kind of focus on what you can do from your perspective rather than trying to decide if society is the problem or the police are the problem or the barrels are the problem. So I'm interested in listening.
Wendy, thank you for your comments. First, that's a point well taken. And the gravamen of where we were going the rest of the show is to talk about where we go from here, how we can fix the things that are broken, whether in law enforcement, whether with the justice system, whether in society, how we could take what we're doing right and continue it while doing some other things better. And that should be the...
Let's talk about the lawyers yourselves. You know what I mean? It's like telling the police what to do or telling... That's what I'm considering. I'm saying, let's hear you talk about yourself. You know, the legal system, your legal rights. How can we make those better?
You have a few of us on the... that you have a captive audience right now with a few of us. Why don't you throw out some questions? Welcome to me and my guests.
Okay, for instance, as a lawyer, as looking at the legal system, how does the legal system tie in with the way the police act? Because they know what the laws are. The laws are influencing the way the society acts, the way people feel about their own rights, the way racism is treated. They're interlocked with laws. So maybe one of your speakers could talk about things they've seen in their profession that they can see needs change, and they have ideas about that way of turning it around.
And Wendy, to that end, while I have your attention, we did a program a few weeks ago about lawyers trying to change things and stepping up with their own time to try to make things better. Both one segment was through the local bar associations, but the other was about the Conference of California Bar Associations. And these are both people that are trying to change laws, make California a better place by changing laws. And one of those might be to lighten up a little bit.
I'm talking about the relationship between the laws and the police and the way the society understands the law and whatever. I don't think lawyers should take their own time. I think they should be paid for this kind of thing. So you see what I mean? I mean, this link.
I do.
Wendy, yeah, this is Josh. Let me try to address one thing that I think might be of interest to you, because I agree with what Carlos was saying, that the police are, they're the ones put in these situations, and so that's why we're seeing them. But one of the things that you address in court that people might not know about, where a lot of these cases hit, and I'm going to ask a question to Carlos about this, is something that's called qualified immunity. And this comes up in these contexts all the time. And it's a really debatable point, but let's try to bring it down so that everyone understands, because it's something that underlies all of these cases, even though it may not be sexy, so it may not be what the news is talking about. Okay, well, let me explain what it is then. Give me a second here. So that government officials performing discretionary functions, such as the police being out there, they're entitled to qualified immunity, and it shields them from a civil damages lawsuit as long as their actions were reasonably thought to be consistent with the rights that were allegedly violated. Now, that sounds like what we call a negligence standard, that it's pretty broad, but that's actually not the standard, because it only attaches when an official's conduct does not violate clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known. Now, that's a mouthful of law, but that is a pretty high standard to have to get past. Now, I was clerking for a federal judge in the Fourth Circuit, which is the Bible Belt, and it was very difficult for someone suing the police to get past that standard. I called a friend in the Ninth Circuit who said, welcome to liberalism. It's quite different out here. But that is the threshold that it has to be. And it's narrowed to the facts. You can't just say you violated my First Amendment rights and you knew that wasn't permissible, therefore I get to go forward. You have to prove that under the very narrow set of facts you have in front of her, then that they knew that under that fact pattern, they were violating your rights. And that can be a high threshold. And so
there are a lot of laws that have racism that is involved in them. There's no doubt about that.
Well, let me finish my question, because I'm going to ask it to Carlos. Carlos, given that standard, is that the correct standard that we hear about, or maybe we do see about, certainly we read about of your lawyers, to hold police to in order to rectify wrongs, make them accountable, or do justice?
That's a good question, Joshua. You know, as you know, qualified immunity wasn't created specifically for police. It's for public and government officials. And
you're right.
Law enforcement falls under that category. And it is a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. My reply is, I don't know that qualified immunity is the answer, but for somebody to do the job that we expect law enforcement to do in our contemporary time, we have to give them some protections to do that job, recognizing that people are going to get hurt, mistakes are going to be made. And whether it's qualified immunity or a replacement to that, there needs to be something that protects our law enforcement officers who we task to perform these dangerous jobs, around the clock.
Well, I agree with you on that. And this goes to what our caller is talking about. This is the legal question that we have. Police are put in a situation.
It is, but it's not working. It's not working.
Well, hold on, but that's what we're trying to get at. We're put in a situation that is precarious. It's not a situation I'm ever put in. It's very easy for me to sit back and judge someone who is not putting their life on the line. I get that. I believe that. And the Supreme Court wrestles with this question of what is the standard, or what should it be for qualified immunity. We can change the standard. And really, if you go throughout different courts in the United States, it's applied very differently. Again, when I was in the Bible Belt, it was applied very strictly. When I came out here, it was applied very differently. How should it be applied so that it protects the individual.
We're going to break in about 3.5 minutes.
Just as an aside, Josh, and to our listener, there is a lot of debate now about changing the standard from qualified immunity to possibly something more like recklessness or criminal negligence. And that
I'll leave you there, but I think this is a good area to explore, and I'm glad to hear you want to look at how to make it a better working system. So thank you for addressing my concern.
Because that standard is not set by the legislature. Qualified immunity was crafted by the courts. 1983 has thousands of cases, and it comes down to one sentence. And this immunity was crafted by the courts. And it was reworked maybe 20 years ago in a case called Saucier versus Katz. And every once in a while, it gets tinkered. So it's not going to be any one of us here that tinkers it. It's not going to be Congress, likely, that tinkers it. But someone's going to have to sell the court on how they should budge or what makes more sense. And I would be interested if somebody has something that changes that standard, which afterwards, when I was clerking on the trial level, we were scratching our heads saying, this was a really interesting academic standard. And but us little people down on the trial level who aren't Justice Scalia and academic have absolutely no idea what to do with this.
You know, one possibility.
The Congress seems to have some idea what to do with it, because the National Policing Act that's pending in the House of Representatives right now talks about a recklessness standard, which would take away, of course, the fact specificity and make it more like a criminal negligence standard in civil cases. So Saucier could at some point be overruled by statute. Hasn't happened yet, but that's where it seems to be going.
The other possibility is to have different standards when applied to the individuals on the front line who are making split-second decisions, as opposed to the municipalities. Right now, you can't get past an individual to get to the municipality unless you show certain things which Manel would set out as policy or practice, and either custom or by training, whatever it may be. And that might not be an appropriate standard when looking at it. But you're also looking at suing taxpayers and whether we should all bear the cost of defending when it's not a situation that's reckless or the like. And these are heady questions that we're going to pick up again when we come back in just a few minutes. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we return to the nuts and bolts of substantive law. We take a look at issues surrounding disability and employment law. In 2 weeks, we're back to talk about land use too. The last time we covered land use, the phones rang enough that we didn't cover nearly the material we had laid out. So we're back in 2 weeks with land use too. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we have an all-star cast. We're talking about policing in our cities, what we're doing right, what's wrong, and what is it we need to change? What do we need to change about all of us? If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. That's questions regarding your civil rights, about law enforcement, about the legal system. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
So glad to have you listening here at KALW in San Francisco. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to everyone who's taken advantage of our phone number, 800-525-9917, and our website, kalw.org, to start a new membership and even a monthly gift, sustaining membership, 800-525-9917. I'm Angie Coro. John Carroll is here, too, to make very much the same case in his own words.
Well, yes, I will use slightly different words. So we're here actually just for these few minutes. We're going to give you just this little squeak of time to make your contribution to KALW and support the programming that you love. And you can do it by calling us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online at kalw.org. And you know, it's the quality of KALW reporting. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, Angie. It's complete, it's unbiased, it's it's based on the truth. It's the path we've chosen, which is not always the easiest one. But we always look to how do we create the hyper-local angle? What can we tell you about context within the news stories about how they affect us here in the Bay in our own communities? Because not only do we work in these communities, we live in these communities.
Yes.
We are your friends and your neighbors and your family. And we hope you become a part of the KALW family by donating today. Call us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and make that donation.
You know, so much news and so much programming is agenda driven now. Our only agenda is to bring information, entertainment, and culture to the San Francisco Bay Area. That's it. We just want to give you the best that we can, and we do it courtesy of all of our listeners who have become members. 800-525-9917 or join us at kalw.org. Thank you.
During the break, Carlos, I had a very interesting suggestion texted to me asking if you felt it would be beneficial for a practice in law enforcement to have people that are moving up through the ranks spend a bit of time in internal affairs before moving up. Maybe them learn what's happening out there, where people are complaining, exactly what's going on before they move in their own career. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a good idea. From a practical perspective, you know, we have one sergeant in internal affairs for a organization of 800 plus. However, what we do is I ensure that our internal affairs sergeant really handles the major cases, right? But the day-to-day citizen complaints of a more minor nature, those are assigned to the supervisor of the employee who is alleged to have engaged in misconduct. And the rationale and philosophy behind that is, I want to make those supervisors accountable for their people. And if we have, and we have nobody like, we have no employees that have anywhere near, you know, 18 or I can't even imagine anybody who's got over, I can't think of anyone who has more than 3 complaints during the time I've been there. But by having the supervisor investigate those, the supervisor is responsible for that employee. He's accountable. He or she is accountable for that employee. And of course, because of the size of our organization, I'm able to make the final decision on all discipline. And if somebody's a new employee or a newer employee or even a more tenured employee and they commit a serious offense, then I discipline them seriously so that, you know, we can correct that behavior early on and not have it repeat itself. And also by the same token, if we have someone who commits a major offense, then we work to remove them from the organization, and we are very successful. There are some organizations in some states where unions are much more powerful, and perhaps employees are not, organizations are not able to address those problem employees as easily as we are, but it definitely is different.
Jeff, I want to go back for a second just to comment on the discussion we were having before. Dean mentioned that Congress could take the lead and change qualified immunity. Just for our listeners, the first one who was interested in the legalese of it, let's play this out just to tell you what could happen as you're watching this play itself out. So if Congress does decide to change that, qualified immunity was set forth by the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court is going to eventually have to take up to determine, was it a constitutional issue, in which case Congress did not have the authority to change it, or was the basis for their decision setting forth the standard governing police not in the Constitution, in which case it's likely that Congress would be allowed to get away with it.
With that, let me turn it over to Ben from San Francisco. Ben, you're on your legal rights.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. For 50 years, in 50 states, the United States government and its minions have been running American police death squads, coast to coast, murdering black folks predominantly, but not exclusively, brown folks, poor white folks, in the name of white supremacy. This is not police brutality. It's called genocide. You people are killing three of your own citizens every day. That puts you right up there with the Burmese and the Chinese and the Turkish fascists and Nazis. Now, all this nonsense talking about qualified immunity, blah, blah, blah. You have been running death squads and they are run through your police associations with the complicity of your district attorneys, attorney generals, county prosecutors, coast to coast, 50 states, 50 years. And you've murdered everybody, including African immigrants like Mulugeta Salau in Portland, Oregon. You've murdered poor Africans like Amadou Diallo, black folks like Sean Bell. And you have the audacity to try to pass this nonsense off as police brutality, or that it's
no one on the show.
Ben, thank you for
American Police Death Squad.
Ben, thanks for joining us, and I appreciate your thoughts. But that's really not what this show is meant for. We are here tonight to talk about where we go moving forward, what we can do to try to improve relations between different groups in our society, not just between the police and everybody, but between different groups within the society, whether it's the police, whether it's people of advantage to people that are disadvantaged. How do we fix these things going forward? And your comments, I appreciate your thoughts, but it's really not what we were here to talk about tonight.
Yeah, well, I have a couple of thoughts on solutions, and I'm glad that we are talking tonight about solutions rather than just going on about the nature of the problem and the extent of the problem. My thought is that after looking at and talking on TV and radio about the George Floyd murder trial, one thing I found out in doing my research is that every time I went on the internet and looked into the participants, the union kept popping up. If you look at Chauvin's defense team, the first thing you get on Google from them is their webpage that's part of the union website. Kim Potter, who had killed somebody in the line of duty during the Chauvin trial, was the president of the union. And my thought is that maybe the immediate solutions start at the negotiating table. And that when we sit down to negotiate with police unions, maybe it should be part of the agenda for management to say, look, we're not going to tolerate 22 complaints. We're not going to reinstate somebody who may be indicted for murder. If you have one sustained complaint of excessive force, then you're done. And your name goes into a national database, so you won't work as a peace officer again. And I know Carlos has mentioned the union, and I think our sheriff's deputies are unionized. I'm wondering, is there an opening there to negotiate at the table for better discipline, stricter discipline, more restrictions on what happens to police officers when there's a sustained complaint?
I think that's an excellent point. It's not something that I think you would negotiate. I think management of the organization has to have the courage to discipline people and ensure, you bring up a good point, and ensure that discipline is sustainable. What happens is in many organizations, including ours, you have binding arbitration or you have rules that management has agreed to, which give the employee many opportunities to win their job back. But if it's been my experience that if we do a good job of disciplining people, documentation early on, good investigations, you know, you can uphold discipline. When I was referencing unions, Dean, I was primarily referencing unions. You know, many of the cases that you talked about, I think you said murderers getting their job back. I'm not sure that, I don't know about that case. you know, many of them did not happen here in California. So it's just, it's difficult to have a national standard. I do agree with you that they're talking about having a national database on officers who have been fired. They shouldn't get a job somewhere else, especially if they're fired for, you know, a criminal offense or you know, excessive force. You know, I think that is one of the solutions that we should be able to see. As I mean, there's some good ideas coming out of the George Floyd incident, as tragic as that incident was. You mentioned earlier about, you know, police going to all calls. Well, you know, we don't want to go to all calls, but you know why we go? Because we're the only ones to go. Who else is going to go? You know, there's talk about, you know, now people want to, you know, use the CAHOOTS program, which works very well up in Oregon, where you have mental health professionals who go to calls involving individuals having a mental health crisis. You know, I read where they divert like 5% of the total calls. And even then, you know, you look at some of the incidents that we've had in San Mateo County, you know, tragically, they involve people with weapons. And I don't want to send civilians to those types of calls. But if they want to reduce the number of calls that law enforcement has to go to and have somebody else respond to them, I'm very highly in favor of that. I just worry about which calls and who's going to go.
Let me respond to this, because I want to take it back to a little practicality. The law change, giving an analogy to the Me Too movement in California to respond to the Me Too movement in trials as to evidence and as to other matters that could come in. It's, I think, very plausible that the law could respond accordingly to what we're seeing now. The standard for summary judgment, which is where before you, for our listeners, before you get into a trial, defendant will file this motion to say, even if all the facts, you know, you can't prove what you're saying, so we shouldn't have a trial. There were all sorts of changes in California law to make it easier for the victim to pursue their case. You could change a standard so that more complaints, if there were out there against somebody or what have you, against somebody's history in these, could come into evidence. You could change the standard for summary judgment. You could tinker with a lot of these things through simple civil procedural changes that may and could potentially have severe impacts on shifting it to what we consider to be more equitable. These are changes that, as lawyers, I would think we should be discussing. These aren't broad policy changes, but these are legal changes that changed in response to one movement only a few years ago that may be applicable here. Does anyone have any response to that?
We have but a moment, but one thing also to think about, and this is in response to what you just told us a moment ago, Sheriff, it may be that part of the solution is to approach this a little more creatively and rethink some of what we're asking of law enforcement, because we do put law enforcement in an often untenable position of sending them out to places where the skills that are needed are somewhat different than what we've trained people to do. But as you point out, we may be sending unarmed people to deal with somebody who's not only mentally ill but armed. And that begs the question, and something I want you to take up in a moment when we come back from the break. It really does beg the question, what type of skills do we have to employ for the person who answers the phone and takes that call, and really to decide who to dispatch and what the needs are? And how do we back the person up that arrives in case the first person got it wrong? You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you for tuning in. I'm Angie Cuero here on KALW in San Francisco. John Carroll would very much like a word with you.
Well, a couple of words, actually, because we're here to remind you that everything that you hear on this station is possible only through listener support. And that means you. That means your contribution. And you can do that by calling us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org and click donate. You'll be glad you did. And it'll only take you a couple of minutes, and it'll be something that you can cross off your list, you can feel good about, knowing that you're supporting the station that you love and the programs that you love.
You know, if you were to have the opportunity to walk down the main hallway here at KALW, you would see placard after placard, a bit of gold, a bit of silver there, and it's all about the awards that our programming has won just because we work so hard on that and just because we have funding from our listeners. That's why KALW is part of every day. That's why you have a chance to listen in your car, on the bus, on BART. Take a few minutes now to help pay for these priceless moments of radio. 800-525-9917. Go online at KALW.org.
And you know, Angie, as we've heard countless times, these are unprecedented times.
You know,
personally, I'm looking for precedented times to come back sometime soon. But for right now, we understand that not everyone is in the position to give right now. So don't feel guilty about if you can't afford to give. However, if you are in a position that you can do so, please consider making a gift, not only for yourself, but for those in your community that depend on this station and depend on the information that we provide. And it's easy to do. You just call us at 1-800-525-9917 or go online to KALW.org and click donate. It's fast and simple, and you will be glad, and we will be glad.
We'd love to have you. 800-525-9917.
So, Carlos, where we left off, we talked about taking some of these things that we're asking of law enforcement to do, which traditionally may have been met in other ways, or maybe with knowledge that we have today, there are better ways to deal with it. And instead of sending out someone who's trained in a type of intervention that might be the wrong type for somebody who has mental health problems, who's going to screen those, that what those needs are? Who's going to be there to back up whoever shows up? Do you have any ideas of how we might approach this better going forward?
Well, I'll tell you that in San Mateo County, we have crisis intervention training, which we provide to all of our sworn personnel out in the fields so that they at least have the skills to respond to these calls. And sometimes, you know, calls for service are rarely do they send you to something that's so specific where they say, this is exactly what you have. Sometimes you have you could have a vandalism, you could have a person, you know, sleeping behind a building, and quite rapidly it turns into somebody who might be experiencing a mental health crisis, and you have to, use whatever skills you have to try to, de-escalate the situation without using force. Now, we've also developed an ECIT program, Enhanced Crisis Intervention Training, where we ensure that our people are also trained in, you know, developing a plan before we encounter a difficult situation. And sometimes, we disengage, which is a big change in law enforcement because we're taught to go in and resolve the problem. Well, now, we're being taught that if it's somebody who presents no danger to someone else other than, perhaps themselves, we're not going to go in and use force. We will provide them with some resources and we'll leave. But, I'm very interested in hearing about the types of, because, you know, we all heard, you know, defund the police, divert all the money to social programs, qualified immunity, all the things that came up immediately after the George Floyd trial, and then, you know, defunding turned into reimagining because I think people realized that defunding was, you know, probably not very practical and only hurts those communities that need law enforcement the most. So it really is an opportune time for us, you know, to look at law enforcement and say, how can we do a better job of keeping people safe? How can we avoid, the number of incidents that involve, use of force and deadly force? However, there's a whole other side to that equation, and then I'm going to let somebody else talk. And that is we fail to talk about the other individuals who contribute to the use of force by police. It's been my experience that if somebody, cooperates, follows the commands of the officers. Typically, those situations rarely, if ever, turn into deadly force. But when you fight with the police, you take the police's taser, you go to your car to get a weapon, or you somehow in some other way present a danger to that officer, I think that officer has the right to use force to go home at the end of the night, just like everybody else does, whatever job they perform.
Dean Johnson, you look like you have a comment to make on that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and I've seen posts on Facebook that say, hey, if you just do what the officer tells you to do, you'll be fine. And we know that's not true. For the most part, George Floyd did what the officers told him to do. The individual that was killed by Kim Potter during the Chauvin trial did what the officer told him to do. Breonna Taylor was at home asleep in her bed when she was shot by police officers. It just is not always the case. The young black man in Virginia who was in his military uniform, sitting in his car, was doing what the officers told him to do when he was pepper sprayed and dragged out of his car. I mean, it's just, it's really glossing over things to say, hey, just do what the cop tells you to do and you'll be fine.
That's not true, Dean. I mean, let's start with George Floyd. The man did not deserve what happened. In no way will I defend that officer. But George Floyd didn't just cooperate the entire time from the videos that I saw.
I didn't say that. I said,
for the most part.
The facts of the case were that when officers Lane and King arrived, they told him to sit on the curb. He sat on the curb. They said, how are you feeling? He said, I'm feeling much better. They said, get up. He got up. They said, let's go over to the police car. At that point, he said, I'm claustrophobic and I just got over COVID. Please don't put me in the police car. I'll lay down, face down on the street if you want. I just don't want to get into the police car. That's where there was some struggle. But for the most part, he did what he was told to do.
Breonna Taylor certainly didn't offer
any resistance, Carlos. She was at home in bed.
So who?
Breonna Taylor.
Let me talk for a second. What you forgot to say was the other person in her house fired at the law enforcement who was coming in. Did you know that part?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think it's intellectually not honest to not mention that. I want to talk about the whole picture. If you're a police officer, which, Dean, I don't know that you – I know you have never been one, and you're going into a door and somebody fires at you from inside that house, what are you going to do?
You're probably going to fire back at the person
Why
are you going to unload your weapon into somebody who's lying in bed?
Well, you don't know that they're in bed because you're outside the house, Dean, and you're firing at the threat inside the house.
You just said if they come inside the house, and those officers were inside the house when they killed Breonna Taylor.
I think it's easy to say from the comfort of your couch.
With that, let me take one quick call. Starchild from San Francisco. We have just a few moments. We're at the end of the show, but I wanted to give you a chance to get a word in.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, two things. One is that we're expecting police officers to do so much to go after people for things that are not really crimes. They're not hurting anybody else. They're actually, in some cases, explicitly protected by the Constitution. First Amendment demonstrations. The police show up and they escalate tensions and they end up abusing people's rights and stuff. Second Amendment, people get picked up all the time for weapons violations, even though it's right in the Constitution, Second Amendment, right, to keep up their arms. They haven't hurt anybody. Putting drugs into your own body or selling people drugs consensually, prostitution, consensual stuff. If police officers weren't going after people for all these kind of things, there'd be a lot less incidents for them to get into and a lot less situations arise where they'd abuse people's rights.
The second thing is,
I don't think putting on a badge gives you any extra rights, and we need to hold police officers to the same standard as others. Like the cop, would shoot somebody in a particular circumstance. If it's not okay for a civilian to do it in that same circumstance, set of conditions, shouldn't be okay for the police officer either.
I had to cut you off, but we are out of time. But thanks for joining us. And you do bring up some good things. We do ask a lot from the police that probably is a reflection of what we're asking them to do and what laws we put in place, right or wrong. We put them in an untenable position. We're virtually out of time, but Carlos, I wanted to give you the last word. If you want to take a minute or so for any last thoughts.
No, just thank you. Thank you for having me on. I mean, I think these are very difficult issues. It's a difficult time in our society. And, you know, I just think that if we focus solely on law enforcement, and I'll tell you, law enforcement, we have problems. We can improve and we need to improve. But if we focus solely on law enforcement, if we don't present the total picture of the incidents that law enforcement has to face, if we don't look at how we as a society can make life better for people of color in our country, we're missing the boat, and we'll be back here again. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. And Dean, you've only got about 30 seconds, but if you want to, go for it. 30 seconds.
I think our main problem is one of perception. We've had through the last several decades a war on crime, a war on drugs, a war on terror. And every time we talk about war, the police become more like a military organization. We need to change that perception of police, and we need to look at the other side of the equation for policing, which is that police not only are the people who use force to protect us, but they also have a duty of care to make sure that people aren't harmed and that they are protected even from what police might do to them.
And that'll be almost the last word on the subject tonight. Thank you for those comments as well. The reality is that we're taking regular people like you and I and throwing them in an almost impossible situation. And some really rise to the task. Sometimes they don't. And as we see with someone like Derek Chauvin, there's a reason that he was convicted of murder just last week. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Tonight we've been speaking about the problems that are plaguing both police work today, suggestions how they are reflective of our own societies, things we might be able to do about it to make make our societies a better place. Our guests tonight have been, unfortunately, it was not civil rights attorney and activist John Burris who didn't make it. We did have the pleasure of having with us San Mateo County Sheriff Carlos G. Bolanos, and I appreciate your joining us, Sheriff, and Redwood City attorney and legal and political commentator Dean Johnson. And as co-host tonight, Josh Borger, thank you all for joining us. Our show tonight has been produced by yours truly. Please tune in next week at our usual time of 6 o'clock when Your Legal Rights returns to the nuts and bolts of substantive law. We take a look at the issues surrounding disability and employment. In 2 weeks, Land Use 2. Again, the last time we covered this topic, the phones rang so much we did not cover all of our material. So we're back with Land Use 2. That's Your Legal Rights, Wednesday nights at 6 o'clock. Once again, a big thanks to our guests, and especially to all of you for joining us. For Josh Borger and at the controls, Damian D. Minor, I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and stay safe.